Terry, let me give a really good example of what you just said and make clarify for our listeners. In one of my former jobs, I was a director of a crisis intervention hotline. We did a lot of work around, alcoholic families would call us in crisis. And the one thing we learned, especially we also know this in the literature, that you can cure the alcoholic, the person quits drinking. The problem is that we forget about the family members because they all have roles in that system. We had the enabler and all the other, if you're familiar with family systems at all, everybody takes on roles. And without looking at the family dysfunction first, as you're trying to help the alcoholic stop drinking alcohol, the family is still going to be in turmoil and dysfunction. So you may, on one hand, okay, you've cured the alcoholism, but the other problem is that the family is still dealing with the alcoholic. And they're dealing with the alcoholic as if he was still an alcoholic. And I say also he, I really mean she, he or she. As they interact with this person, they're not doing the same things that they're used to. And this happens, I find this to be the case in churches as well and organizations. One person kind of gets an epiphany, if you will. Well, I need to change my behavior about how I relate with people. All of a sudden, he or she is acting in a different way and people don't know how to relate to him anymore. And so this is what is really important. You got to look at all the interactions within the system, all the subsystems of the system, and also how people interrelate with those things. And that's really important to look at. And to help summarize what we're really meaning by system, let's say we have the universe. God made this wonderful, expansive universe, but what's really in it? Well, let's dissect it if we can. If I were to look at the universe and do an OD project on the universe, I would have to look at all its systems. Let's start with, from there, I'd have to look at all the galaxies. If I was looking at the galaxies, then I have to look at the solar systems. And let's say one solar system, particularly ours. And then from the solar system, then we look at another subsystem, which would be planet Earth. And from planet Earth, we look at the ecosystem and how the weather changes and those types of things. And then we look at world civilizations. And then we get even further down, we get into nations. And then from nations, we get into states or provinces. And then from provinces, we go down to local community. And then from local communities, we get to the individual. That could be us as individuals. And then from the individual, we get into another system called the nervous system. And then the brain. And then we go from brain to brain cells. And then from cells, we go to cell nucleus. And then from the nucleus, we go to a molecule. And then from a molecule, we go to an atom. And then from the atom, we go to a particle. I mean, this is one way to look at a system as a universe, and you can see how complex this is because each one of these things has its own complex subsystems.
Alan, I think the universe is an excellent illustration. It shows us the depth and the width of this whole concept. And I think what we're really trying to do is to help the listener to take a step back and to not merely focus on one aspect in problem solving or in being a conflict consultant or an interventionist or even a pastor, but to step back and look at the whole pie and its various pieces. I was just thinking as you were discussing that, because you went from those things that are increasing in size from the universe and the galaxy, those are very large things, down to the very small thing, which would be the atom and the particle. And in the church, we have a very large church structure. It contains many various systems within it, and we can go from the large picture down to decreasing in size to the individual and some of the smaller aspects of that. The other thing that I was thinking of as you were describing this was the fact that as a conflict consultant or an interventionist or as a pastor, let's say that we have Bill who is who is presenting problems in the organization. Bill's a nuisance. He's a well-intentioned dragon, and he's a thorn in the flesh. So if we focus merely on Bill himself, that's one thing. But with OD, with an OD perspective, it allows us to put a wide-angle lens on this and to say, why does the system allow Bill to act this way anyway? What is the relationship here? Why is this system allowing this? So even if you did correct Bill or manage Bill, then Bob and then Ruth pop up later on. So you haven't really fixed the system. You've fixed an individual. And I think what this helps us to do is to step back, look at the system, look on a grander scale, and see the interrelationships and fix things on a system basis so that the bills don't raise up any further. So I think that's kind of a good overcap of that. Alan, we've taken the time now to define organization development. We've also had some key words there. We've talked a little bit about systems. Now we know that the church is a collection of smaller parts all interreacting with each other. But we haven't really talked much about how these systems, these subsystems, relate and interreact together, specifically with the individual and the various groups within the larger unit, within the larger system. So could you address that?
Terry, I'll speak to that. And let's say, for instance, I was called in as a consultant to work in a church to help identify how the organizational pieces work together, okay, and how an individual kind of relates to that. And let's assume we have, from my own experience, typically what I do is come into an organization, and the first question I ask is, okay, who's really in charge here? Okay, yeah, we have leaders. Yeah, okay. And they're paid to actually lead the organization, but the question I always ask, who's really in charge? And that's kind of one of the questions that I would ask coming in. And I kind of use a framework to help me understand how these things interrelate with one another. And that framework comes from Marvin Weisbord, Organizational Diagnosis. And he uses what he calls a 6-box model. Now, I really like it. I haven't really found anything as good as this since, and I use it quite frequently. Let me kind of describe it to you, Terry. Essentially, there are seven issues that you want to look at. It's really, even though it's called the 6-box model, there are really 7 things. But with inside the box, let's say the box is the organization, what is the purpose of the organization you want to look at? And so a lot of times organizations are really, really struggling with this whole thing. Why are we in business? Why are we here as a church? Why? I mean, believe it or not, there are some churches out there who have no clue about why they're there. And I think you and I have been to those churches before. And there's not a shared sense of vision, if you will. The second thing I want to look at is the structure. Okay, how do we divide up the work? How is the work at a church done? Or how is the work at the organization done? And in the church, you have choir, you have the educational committee, you have the deacons and the deaconesses, or you have the trustees that look over the money. So each church has its own kind of polity or set of elders. And really, at this point, I'm not advocating any one sense, how that work is done, but we want to investigate how does that church do it. The third thing I want to look at is what are the relationships? And this is where managing conflict comes in the most. How do we manage conflict or coordinate amongst people? And those are the questions I ask, okay? How do you deal with conflict? How do you relate to one another? And a lot of times just by being in the organization, you can see it. But some people will tell you how it's done. The fourth thing is I will look at rewards. Now, why is rewards a part of this model? You know, well, we don't have an award system in the church, or, you know, we don't give out money to people if they do a good job. I mean, this is, you know, our rewards are in heaven. Reality is, a system does what it does because it's rewarded for doing it. Does that make sense? A system does what it does because it has some type of reward attached to it. So I want to know, what incentive does a system have in the way it's doing business right now? Okay. The fifth thing is leadership. Is someone keeping all of these boxes together? Now, OD is very leadership dependent. Organizations are not successful without good leadership. And I'm not talking necessarily about one person, but it could be a group of people. It could be several committees of people. But the issue is that the leadership clearly defined? And this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm asking. Who's really in power here? The sixth thing is, what helpful mechanisms are in place in order for all these things to coordinate? In other words, in the business world, you may look at technologies. But in the church life, you may look at, okay, is there a bridge between the educational committee and the trustees or the deacons? And how are those two committees, how do they relate to one another? And the last thing, the seventh thing, the outside environment. I know in one of your former courses, Terry, you talk a lot about a church may be in conflict because it may be in a community that is changing, or people are, or maybe in a location where people are moving out, like Love Canal. I mean, you don't want to buy a house in Love Canal as a Superfund site. So, of course, church is not going to stay there either if people are moving out. So that becomes a real challenge for a church to deal with. The other, and so you want to look at what outside influences are happening that is causing the church to do what it's doing. Okay?
Well, I like that model, Alan. I think it's very helpful for illustrating how one would go about looking at systems and what kind of information that individual needs to see how the system works. Let me just reiterate what you said so the listener can have this readily available to them. Number one, you talked about purposes. What is the purpose of the organization or the church? Number two, you wanted to find out about structure. How do you divide the work? And in the church, we talk about the polity and the various committees and such. The third, you wanted to look at relationships. How do people relate to one another? When something goes wrong, how do they relate to one another? How do they manage the conflict? And you know from my previous courses that there are many ways that churches handle conflict. Matter of fact, churches develop patterns, congregational patterns of dealing with conflict that they're not even consciously aware of. And number four, you talked about rewards. And I know that in the Christian realm, we talk about doing everything for the Lord and serving the Lord and not taking any credit for ourselves. And that's absolutely true, because we want to give glory to the Lord in all that we do. But there is this intrinsic reward. People are involved in church because it's rewarding to them. It's rewarding to live a life pleasing to God. And so they're involved in churches. Sometimes a lot of people are involved because of obligation, and then that impacts the system, doesn't it? So why are people there, and what are the rewards that they're receiving from their involvement? Then you have leadership. Is someone keeping the box in balance, or these systems together? And then you had helpful mechanisms. How do these things work together? What mechanisms or what is coordinating all of these items together so that we even have a system? What are the mechanisms in place for having this function? So that's very good. I appreciate that. Alan, that six-box model is very helpful, and it gives us some key perspectives to grab onto as we're examining systems. But let's break it down even further, because, for instance, if you're looking at the purpose of the church, and we know what that is. What business is the church in? Again, if we can use that term, why does the church exist? We know what to ask, but how? What do we do to actually find out that information? And with regard to relationships and with regard to these various components, we know what we should be looking for now, but exactly what steps do we take to gather that information?
Terry, simply put, the best way to get that information from that system is a technique of what we call NOD, action research. And you're probably thinking, action research? What's that? Does that mean I got to take a research course from Trinity Seminary on statistics, what I call sadistics? No, we don't have to do that. Action research essentially is asking a series of questions through a variety of means. It could be interviews, it could be surveys, it could be focus groups, it could be large group information gathering. And you want to ask some pertinent questions for each one of those six boxes that we talked about. And by doing so, one of the foundational tenets of OD is involving the system in the process. By doing so, this is how you involve the system. Action research assumes that everyone else, no one person has all the right answers, okay? And everyone else has something to contribute to the, not only do they have something to contribute to the problems of the organization, but they have something to contribute to the solution or the improvement of the organization. So action research has the basis that the system knows best about its problem. It doesn't take the medical model where an expert looks at the system and diagnoses and then also treats. It assumes that people know what's going on. The reason why I use the statement that it's not like the medical model. The medical model means one individual with many years of since I work in a medical organization, I understand the commitment and dedication that physicians have and other medical providers in learning how to diagnose disease and looking and pinpointing. Now, this is not, when we talk about diagnosis, we're not looking at that type of thing. When you're dealing with people systems rather than the body, which requires expert knowledge of how the body's systems work, people kind of inherently know how their systems work socially. And so it comes from that basic foundation that, okay, I know how this organization works. And I know, who's in charge and who I can talk to. And I also know if I do this, then this bad thing will happen to me. And therefore, from experience, we kind of know how the system operates. So essentially, if I'm going to do that, look at each these six boxes. One thing I want to do when I'm talking about, I want to define what the formal system is, and that means the organizational chart, simply put. But I also want to find out what the informal system is. Some types of questions I want to ask would be, to what extent do most people in the organization understand the purposes the same way I do, okay, or another person would? And to what extent do people in the organization see it serving in major ways purposes different from the stated ones? In other words, sometimes the organizations say that they're striving to be the best organization in the world. Okay, in the church you'll hear, well, we want to win souls for Jesus, but is that really what they're doing? Does that stated purpose conflict with the reality? And I want to test that theory, in an organization. I also want to look for, like I said, contradictions of formal purpose versus those types of things. And the other thing I wanted to also add to this whole idea of purpose was a lot of times in organizations, you see this a lot, and this happens, is that the organization or the church, and when I talk organization, I'm assuming that we're talking in the church framework, okay? The church is saying, we have this mission, we have this purpose to reach the lost for Jesus Christ. And And this whole idea of a lot of times we get off track from that purpose. So we do things like that don't really live up to the first stated purpose. I can't think of anything offhand that would be contradictory to that. But a lot of organizations will take on things that have no bearing whatsoever on the mission of their stated goal of the organization. And so those are the things, okay, what's going on that contradicts, again, the purpose of the organization or that doesn't fit? And some organizations, quite frankly, take on more than they can chew. And this is also problematic. So you want to look at that. And you also want to look at an organization that doesn't have any goals to begin with. There are a lot of churches out there who have no goals.
Well, that's exactly right, Alan. And you know, if I were to walk into the average church, and I speak from many, many years of pastoral ministry experience, and teaching this whole area at the undergraduate and graduate level, that if I were to walk into the average church and ask the leaders or the elders or whoever, whatever type of polity system you have, those who are in charge there, what the purpose of the church was and have them write that down on a piece of paper and then ask them to share, I bet we would have, we would rarely have agreement on that. So the very foundation of the system could be a problem in itself because the system itself doesn't even know what the purpose is. There's no agreement there. So obviously you're going to have some dysfunction with the interrelating of the various parts because there's no unifying purpose of the entire system. You had mentioned, Alan, how churches sometimes are doing things that contradict their stated purpose. And oftentimes, when a church does get to a formal vision statement or mission and purpose statement, it's only a paragraph in writing. It has no practical implementation. It's not really worked out. And this is what you're saying, is that someone who looks at this needs to see if there's some discrepancies between what the stated purpose is and what the actual purpose is. And it will help that individual to diagnose that aspect of the purpose within the system. And one other thing, I just was thinking of a church that I read about that wanted evangelism, and they wanted to grow for the cause of Christ. And so they hired someone, and he was into evangelism. He had gifts in that area. And he began to identify the people in their sphere of influence in the community who needed the Lord. And so he identified a lot of small groups, unwed mothers, single mothers, people like that, divorced individuals. And before you know it, the church grew and grew and grew, but all it did was create conflict. Because when they looked out into the parking lot, a church that once had Mercedes and BMWs and Cadillacs now had old junky VWs and old Ford Mustangs and rotted out rusty cars. It wasn't the type of growth that they had in mind. And so someone who understood OD could possibly have seen this coming because of the perceptual differences in what the purpose, even the agreed upon purpose was and what the actuality of that was.
Terry, the next step in this whole six-box model is the second one would be looking at the structure of the organization. Now, you would think, well, that's pretty straightforward. I mean, just look at the organizational chart and see. You have the pastor, and a lot of my tradition in the independent fundamentalist Baptist tradition would be the pastor is the final authority of the church. And so everybody reports to that person. Now, there's other organizations that have the elder boards and other organizations that are ruled by committee or a presbytery or that type of thing. But I'm looking at it from let's look at it much farther from that and say, how is the actual church or organization set up? And by doing that, I'm going to ask people to say, okay, write me an organizational chart. How do you think the boxes connect? And so from that, and I get a really good sense of what people are thinking. Okay, and then we have the publicized organizational chart, but I'm more concerned about what people perceive the organizational chart to be. In keeping with that, I'm still looking at the purposes. Now, these are kind of building blocks now. If the structure is not set up to the purpose of the organization, then the structure needs to be changed. And Marvin Weisbord recommends three possible organizational structure. The one structure would be a functional approach. And by saying that, okay, all the functions, like in a traditional business, you have R&D, marketing, sales, human resources. In a church, you may have the different types of committees that run the church. You have personnel committee, you have the finance committee, and so on. So that would be more a functional approach. The next approach would be the product approach, where you have a church set up in different ministries. And so you give the ministries themselves control over how they run their ministries, like youth ministry, adult ministry, senior adult ministry, those types of things. The other approach that Weisbord talks about is the matrix organization, where all these things kind of work within themselves. And so you have to look at, and what do I mean by that? Well, you actually may be in charge of a particular ministry, but you're working with another ministry to help them out as well. And that would be called a matrix, because you may have several bosses, if you will, people that you're accountable to for those ministries.
Alan, I'm glad you mentioned the fact that these are building upon one another, because how a church is organized, we can tell whether that's organized according to the purpose or if that, in a sense, is creating tension in and of itself. And I like the idea of asking individuals to write down how the organizations run or produce their own organizational chart, because you don't know whether they're going to produce a functional chart, a matrix chart, or whether they're going to see it in formal terms or in an informal term. I know one pastor asked the church to do that, and one of the members wrote down a big circle and said, you know, put a person's name in there. Now that's the structure of the church, was that this individual ran everything, which was, of course, an informal way of doing that. But this is very helpful for us to know how to go about gathering information with regard to the structure. This is the end of number 7.